You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're meeting three more of the nine people seeking a seat on Wilmington City Council. These are staggered four-year terms. Three seats are open. Two of the members with expiring terms are seeking re-election. The third, Earl Sheridan, has chosen not to run again after serving for three terms. Interviews with the other city council candidates are posted at WHQR.org. Joining us now is one of the incumbents, Charlie Rivenbark. He worked for the U.S. Postal Service until he was drafted and went to Vietnam in 1969. He served a tour of duty with the 196th Light Infantry Brigade, and he rose to the rank of sergeant. When he returned, he opened several businesses, including a restaurant on College Road that he later sold. He went into commercial real estate, which he is still involved in today. He served two earlier terms on city council from 1993 to 2001. He was elected again in 2009 and is now completing his fourth term. He has served on the North Carolina Azalea Festival Board, including as president in 2007. He also serves on the CFPUA Board, the Lower Cape Fear Water and Sewer Authority, the Cape Fear Council of Governments, and the Wilmington Metropolitan Planning Organization. Charlie Rivenbark, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Rachel.
Pleasure to have you here. And you can ask your own question of Mr. Rivenbark during this live Thursday interview. Either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Charlie Rivenbark, as someone who is an integral part of the governing body of CFPUA and the Lower Cape Fear Water and Sewer Authority, what are you saying to constituents about how the local drinking water supply got tainted with these unregulated compounds that are probably pretty detrimental to human health?
We're in the process of determining that now, with the help of our regulatory agencies, the Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Health and Human Services, and our Federal Environmental Protection Agency. To answer your question, what am I saying to people? I've been drinking that water all my life. My family has. I have grandchildren that do. It concerns me greatly. But I can assure you that the CFPUA is doing everything that we can to ensure that the water supply is safe and potable. We are doing an experiment with carbon filters. The General Assembly has recently awarded the CFPUA and the UNCW folks a grant, and we're upping our water sampling. And the level that was given us of 140 parts per billion, we are well below that and continue to stay below that in our finished water from the Sweeney plant. So my answer to that is I tell people that until we know something different, I feel that the water is probably safe to drink. There's not been any spike in certain types of diseases or what have you that we can tie to it. But my hope is that, and what we're striving for is for the DuPont Comores people just to completely cease and desist putting anything in the water that may be a carcinogen or anything of that same ilk.
Jez writes, should the elected members of the CFPUA board have been more proactive in getting information to the public?
Well, that's a good question. On June the 7th, I was sent a email from our director stating that the next day that the Star News was going to be running a story about our water, and it was my first blush at it. It was it, and we immediately went into high gear and started doing everything that we could to find out what was going on. And I know that Dr. Canapi had come to CFPUA and was engaged them in doing water sampling. But it was, Rachel, it was a non-regulated contaminant. We didn't even know it was in the water. And once we did find out, we've reacted in concert with the regulatory agencies that we look to.
And that's the gap in timing, though, that I think sometimes members of the public have a hard time understanding. You're saying that the first you knew about Gen X being in the local water supply was the day before the Star News broke the story.
I didn't even know what the story was going to be. It was just said that a story was coming out about the water. And, you know, I don't think that our people, you know, at the CFPA, our staff, our engineering folks, I don't think they realized at that time, and in fact, I'm positive that it was not something of this level. And because, I mean, there's a whole menu of things in water, and our Sweeney Water Plant is state of the art, and it takes everything down well below what EPA tells us the levels are. And we're striving for somebody to give us a level that's based on science and not just some, well, let's go to 140 parts per billion.
Do you think this points out any weaknesses in what the regulations actually are? Can we rely on EPA? Can we rely on North Carolina's Department of Environmental Quality? Or does CFPA need to establish its own standards for drinking water?
That's a very good question. We're not a regulatory agency. We provide, we take water in, we treat it, and we sell it. I think we're getting ready to find out in the real near future the answer to that question. Can we? And to date, I don't have as much confidence in them as I thought I did.
What would it take for CFPUA to say we are establishing our own standards?
I don't think the general statute that we operate under, I don't think we can. You know, here again, that's a question I've not had asked. I don't know that we can establish things. Sometimes in the city, the state will have a standard and we can go better. I don't know how that would apply to our water system, Rachel, but that's a good question. Here again, that would be something that would smack of being a regulatory agency, and we're not.
Do you see redundancies? You've been in city government for quite a long time now. Do you see redundancies with city and county government? And if so, what do you do about those redundancies? I do want to say Gareth Evans is asking, why do we have city and county governments next to each other doing remarkably similar things?
Well, the North Carolina Constitution mandates that there will be counties. And in North Carolina, there are 100. They mandate that there's going to be one sheriff in that county. And the county commissioners, because the counties are an extension of state government. They run the courts. They provide it's health, education, and welfare. They run the health department, the school system, the courts. And when areas like Wilmington started to grow and people were concentrating in the city, there needed to be another level of government to handle the municipal services. And that's what cities do. We were doing water, sewer, police, fire, planning, zoning, and then up until a few years ago, the city was able to annex by law when areas became urbanized, much like they are just north of the city of Wilmington and like they are south of the city of Wilmington. But the General Assembly, in their wisdom, took that away from the cities, and now we can only volunteer. We can only take volunteer annexations. So the county folks have created two cities, and we really don't have that much redundancy. They don't do water and sewer anymore. That was the beauty in creating the CFPUA, is to provide water, sewer, and the city does the trash and the stormwater. So there really isn't a lot of redundancy in the two. It looks like it, but there isn't. The sheriff still patrols. They do their own trash pickup. But I wish we could take in those areas that have become urbanized and so badly need to be a part of the city.
One of the concerns that we've heard from our listeners over and over again in a number of different forms is the representation of developers and real estate people in mm-hmm. city and county government, mm-hmm. planning commissions. As a person who's been involved in commercial real estate for most of your professional career, can you think of a time that you said, no, we need to put the brakes on that, or no, this isn't really true to the spirit of Wilmington?
We have our zoning ordinance is probably one of the strictest and tightly written anywhere in North Carolina, and we're told that from time to time by developers that come here from other places. Let me go back to what I do. I'm not a developer. I lease retail space to a ma and pa that want to open up a restaurant. Once in a blue moon, I'll sell a tract of land, but that's it. I mean, it's just like people in the residential real estate. They sell houses. You know, I do leasing and rentals and stuff like that. We have a lot of 70% of what we do is based on land use issues. So, yeah, we are thrown right into the mix. And I have seen projects come down there that that just didn't fit our mold, and we have either sent them back or denied them. But during the recession that we just came out of a few years back, everything stopped. The music stopped. Hammers stopped banging. And a lot of projects got put on hold or done away with altogether. And then when the economy turned around, all those projects plus the new ones came along. So it looks like a lot more going on, but it's people catching up. But we have a very good comprehensive plan that's just been drafted. And we apply every plan that comes to us. Our staff does, the Planning Commission does, and we end up doing it at council to gauge that against our comprehensive plan.
But there's still a learning curve, isn't there, in terms of how you're interpreting that comprehensive
plan? Yes, ma'am. And we're lay people. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a lawyer. We have those people on our staffs, and our staff is second to nobody. And we have a very good planning commission that vets all of that before it gets to us. And they do, I call it the heavy lifting. And then we're ultimately the ones that make the decision. And a lot of those projects that you see that come to council, some of them got disapproved at the planning commission level and went away. And so we never even get to see them.
I have to ask about short-term rentals.
Okay.
This is the issue this year, it seems, for people. If you could if you could single-handedly shape policy and say this is the way it's going to be, what would that policy look like?
You know, a wise man once told me every good deal, if it's not a good deal, every good deal has a little bit of heartburn on both sides of the transaction. And I don't think this is going to be a bit different. Our staff has done, in my opinion, a yeoman's job in going out into the neighborhood, having neighborhood meetings. And this is not something we're doing knee-jerk. It's going to be well thought out. And I don't know exactly how it's going to shape up. We're having a forum tonight over at the Hannah Block building with the Roe people. And I know that's going to be, you know, heavy on their mind. But you have property rights, and you have people that moved into a residential neighborhood and they want it to stay completely single-family, you know, nature. So there is going to be probably some compromise on both sides.
What would heartburn mean for you?
Well, heartburn for me means we need to do something. I've always been told if you got a problem, you need to take care of it and address it because there's another one right behind it. And if you don't take care of them as they come, they start backing up on you. We need to move forward with this whole house rentals, short-term rentals, and come up with a plan and put it out there for the folks. And if it's not right, if it needs to be tweaked, we can do that, and we will do that.
How do you walk that line between listening to your constituents and then shaping and executing policy that Charlie Rivenbark thinks is the right thing to do?
Well, fortunately, the city doesn't have to live with everything that Charlie Rivenbark thinks is the right thing to do. There are seven of us down there, and we have a terrific staff and a planning commission, and we do get a great deal of input, particularly on an issue like this where there's so much passion about it. And when we get down to the final draft, I've got to feel good about it. I don't vote to go along with everybody. I'm going to vote what I think is the right thing to do, but I will also listen to my other peers on council, and we'll come up with a decision and put it out there. And as I stated before, if we see that there's some unintended consequences that happen with our result, we'll tweak it.
Victoria writes, are you concerned about how fast development is happening in town without fixing some of the more serious underlying issues, racial divide, opioid issues, to name just a few?
Well, the opioid issue that's something that's not just here, that's everywhere. And we get tagged with the opioid capital, and I don't know if that's, I guess it's true, but even if you only have one or two people affected by it, it's too many. So we've developed our Blue Ribbon Commission on youth violence and crime, and a lot of that's tied to drug use, but we're moving forward. We're spending money. We've got federal help. Local regional help on the opioid, and we've got to educate people and get a hold of people before they get involved with that. On the racial divide, that's something that, I was just talking to Reverend Barnett. I do hope that that we will continue to have some African American representation on our council. I think it's important. Dr. Sheridan, who I sit next to at council, has been a valuable asset. We've always had black representation on our council, and I have many friends in the black community and consider them close friends. I don't feel it as much as probably some people do because, you know, I speak my mind. They appreciate that. And when people come before council, and this is what I'm speaking about, is strictly on council. When people come down there, I don't look at them as black, white, Republican, Democrat. They come down there with a problem or an issue, and we handle it. I would love to see race relations be better. I have an 11-year-old grandson. He doesn't see color, and I think it's a generational thing that's coming.
And that's all the time we have. That's this edition of Coastline. Charlie Rivenbark, thank you so much for being with
us
today.
Thank you, Rachel. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks also to Clifford Barnett and Kevin O'Grady and technical director Ken Campbell and associate producer Rachel Keith. Join us each week for Coastline, Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on 91.3 FM in Wilmington and 98.9 in Myrtle Beach. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.